Good Monday morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Antoine Walker is with us. Hope everyone had a nice weekend. We got a great show for you coming up today. Nick with some very wild NFC predictions that will reverberate throughout this panel right here. Ted Ginn Jr. is going to stop by. We got a lot to talk to him about. And we're going to dive into the latest installment of the Michael Jordan documentary. That's where we start this morning. It was the perfect way for me to wrap up Mother's Day last night. Bowl of dry seaweed, three almonds, and episode 7 and 8 what? Of The Last Dance. Sure, y'all had the same exact night. Among other topics covered, Jordan's first retirement, his baseball stint, his fight with Steve Kerr, and his time filming Space Jam. And Antoine, that schedule you had while filming and training with the gym they had set up there, I think that was my biggest takeaway from last night. We'll start with you, Twan. What was yours?
There's a couple of things. The first thing that stands out to me is that how Michael was able to use trash talking, one, to motivate himself, but also to motivate his teammates, especially in that last year. Any little thing that he can get an edge to motivate him, he took advantage of it, and he did it through trash talking. I was really surprised by that. Didn't know he trash talked that much, and didn't know he used it in such a positive way on his teammates where they actually responded with good basketball. Another thing that I took away from it is the baseball. I didn't know he took baseball as seriously did, the effort that he put in, that he put into baseball. And then the last thing is that the competitive part of it. I think we all know he was competitive, but I think it's only a few guys that was competitive about winning championships. That's himself, Bill Russell, Magic, and Bird. He's in the elite category of guys that want to win. I think I'm a competitor, but the level that he competes at is second to none.
Antoine, I have two takeaways and two questions for you. The first of all, what do you think about Jenna's dry seaweed snack at night? And the second question is Jordan's motivation by slights. That he was either looking for slights or just straight up making them up. You played 82 games 5 times in your career. Twice you played 81 games. Are those perceived slights necessary to get through the slog of the entire season?
Well, Jenna, I do like your late night snack pretty good. I wish I could get on that type of
diet. Thank you, Twan.
I think for him, I think as you saw him get later into his career, I think he did need some motivation factors sometimes to motivate him. He was playing for championships, so it's kind of hard to tell. But I think when he wanted to obviously only win championships, so you had to give him the benefit of the doubt that he used every advantage, whether it was a regular season game, whether it was a playoff game, anything a guy did that was going to hurt the team, he took full advantage of that. So I think he needed that in order for him to keep his competitive edge up.
Nick, your takeaway from last night?
Those are great observations by all of you. I liked everything about the opening 4 minutes of the show except for seaweed and almonds, which sounds like a punishment of a yesteryear rather than something to treat yourself
to
on Mother's
Day. Don't knock
it
until you try it, my friend.
My goodness, Jenna. Okay, all right. But I had two significant takeaways from, and by the way, first of all, though, credit to Connor Schell and Libby Geist for doing what I think is the impossible. They were able to actually retrieve from the fire the tapes the NBA had burnt of the Bulls losing to the Magic. Like, no, I mean, if you weren't watching those games live, you've never seen it. I don't know how they did it. I don't know what type of archival they had to do to actually get that on screen, but credit to them. But my two major takeaways were, one, we saw in that famous double nickel game in Jordan's first year back in 95, the final play of that game, where Michael Jordan did something that I've been told my entire adult life he never did, and for somehow this was part of his legend. Game on the line, ball in his hands, he's taking the shot. Unless, of course, Patrick Ewing comes to double him, and then Bill Winnington gets a layup, and it's the right basketball play. But I've been told for a long time, win or lose, it's on me. And then in that Nick Anderson game, Bulls are up one, Nick steals it from him, they get a layup, all of it, but now Bulls down one. Chance for another iconic Jordan moment. And the double comes to him, and he attempts to make the right basketball play. Now he throws it out of bounds. But it was interesting to see in real time that the right basketball play maybe has always existed, and we just kind of pretend certain guys only always take the shots. But my other big takeaway was this. When Jordan retired, there was a universal acknowledgement from Tom Brokaw to Dan Patrick to the damn inscription on the statue that says the best there is, the best there ever will be, that Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player as of August of 1993 who had ever lived. And by the way, I agree with them up to that point in time. But it's just fascinating because I've also been told he was ineligible for that award because he had 3 rings at that point in time. Magic had 5. Kareem had 6. And I just, my whole, everything's been put on its axis, Antoine, because my whole adult life I've been told it's all about counting the rings and not the eye test, and that Jordan had 3 rings, so he couldn't have been the greatest ever, but there was the whole world saying he was the greatest ever. So those were my 2 major takeaways from last night, Antoine.
I think when you look at it, Nick, I know you're trying to hint and get LeBron in the conversation at some point, but that's not about LeBron.
LeBron? Who brought up LeBron?
I think you're trying to hint on that. Because those are some of the criticisms that LeBron gets sometimes. So I know you're trying to head that way. But the thing with Mike was that he obviously is the greatest basketball player to ever play. LeBron James, and I'm a LeBron fan, I think he's the best basketball player in the league right now. But we're talking about league and greatest. Michael was the greatest basketball player. He was the greatest in 93 when he retired from the game. And then when he came back, he just really separated himself from the Magics, from the Kareem, from the Birds, with the extra 3 rings that he got from 96, 96, and 98. That's just how I feel. But, you know, Michael Jordan does make the right play. Look at some of those closeout games in game 6 that he had in the finals. He does make the right play, Nick.
All right, Antoine, let me ask you a little bit more about, I'm sure you've never thought about the LeBron part, Nick. Antoine, your Celtics went 1-3 against the Bulls in Jordan's final season. You had a pretty respectable run. You averaged 24-10 a game. As a kid who grew up in Chicago yourself, what was it like playing against Jordan? There you can see the numbers there. What was it like playing against Jordan in his final season? Give us some insight.
It was great. I was the first year, I would say I was nervous, scared, excited about playing against him because I was a rookie and I grew up for the first 3 championships rooting for him. So now I get into my second year, all that stuff was kind of out the window, and I was focused on trying to beat them. So I got the first game of that season. That's something that I could hold my hat on. But they were great. They were great defensively. The thing that I took away from playing against them was how good that Michael Jordan was in those games. Really easy, real easy for him to score, get to the free throw line, how easy the game was for him at his age. Didn't have to really work hard to get 30 points. He would make 5 or 6 jump shots, get to the free throw line. It didn't have to be this spectacular plays for him to get 30. So those are some of the things that I was really impressed with. And obviously their defense. Their defense was incredible. Scotty and Dennis Rodman were terrific on the defensive end. And Dennis Rodman was the strongest human being I ever played against. It was very difficult for me to post him up, to go against him. So those are like some of the things that stand out to me, you know, when I played against him. But I did get 1, though. You got to give me a little credit. Opening night, I did get 1. They didn't have Scottie Pippen. They didn't have Scottie Pippen opening night, but I did get me 1. That's something I can hold my hat on.
That counts, Antoine.
That's yours. We'll give it to you, Antoine, for sure. All right, so last night's 2 episodes were my 2 favorites so far by a long shot. If you missed any part of it, though, we've got you covered. Kevin Wilds now with the Last Dance Awards for literally everything in 60 seconds or less. Not less, just definitely 60 seconds. Yeah. Kevin, your clock starts now.
Thank you, Jenna. The award for They Feel Like Old Friends and You're Happy to See Them goes to Keith Van Horn and Kerry Kittles. Great to see those guys. The upset award goes to Dennis Rodman for being on the shirts team at the Warner Brothers scrimmage. A surprise there. The Wilds You Might Be Onto Something award goes to, get this, Jordan's criticism of Scott Burrell was particularly harsh because Burrell was drafted by the Mariners out of high school and the Blue Jays after his freshman year at UConn. So Jordan knew that Burrell was a better baseball player than him, and it always ate at him. Little conspiracy theory, but I'm buying it. The award for You Should Have Said Hello to Me at Dinner goes to George Carl. Congratulations, George. Criss Cross Award goes to Jordan's backward shorts. The Interesting Sneaker Trivia Award goes to Nick DiPaola, who noted that Nick Anderson was wearing Jordan 10s when he stole the ball from Jordan, who was wearing Jordan 11s. The award for best name pop, George Kohler, personal assistant and best friend. The what? Award goes to Scottie Pippen, who says he wishes it didn't happen, but also wouldn't change anything about sitting out the final play. Best sign award, legalized Kemp, and the pathetic optimism award, Nick. New York basketball fans, in the reply to LeBron's tweet that said, man, ain't nothing like Madison Square Garden, that started the LeBron to New York rumor. So that's the pathetic optimism award. Congratulations to all the winners.
All right, if I may quickly
here. I love it. Bravo,
I would just like to remind, it was a great job, Wilds, but I would just like to remind Antoine and Kevin, out of respect for Michael Jordan, the second greatest player of all time, if we could make this segment about him, Antoine's out here talking about LeBron. You're bringing up a LeBron tweet that's got nothing to do with it. I mean, give Jordan some due respect, if you would, please. But if I may add an award, the most detached from reality, Michael Jordan, for what he said about Gary Payton. Mike, nobody's taken away any of your rings. Gary Payton put the clamps on you, Mike. We saw the games. Show the numbers. Can we show what Jordan did pre and post Payton guarding him? First three games, when the brilliant George Karl's like, no, Gary Payton, best point guard defender ever, don't guard Mike. Mike kills you. Next three games, look at those points and percentages. Michael Jordan, in the six title run years, played 116 playoff games. His 115th and 114th best, or in other words, second and third worst shooting performances, were games 4 and 6 against Gary Payton. Mike, you got to give somebody credit. Well, I understand that, like, it's not Scott Burrell or Steve Kerr, Bradford Smith, the who's who's of guys you bullied. But Gary Payton's a great player, and he did a pretty damn good job on you. You still won. Jenny, you could have given him a little bit of credit. But aside from that, I thought Wilds did great. Antoine, it's amazing to have you back. And Jenna, I applaud you for, along with me, being the only person that could keep this segment about Jordan the way it was supposed to be, as opposed to bringing up other basketball players trying to steal some of his shine. Right. I think it's unfair. I think it's uncalled for.
Nick, full disclosure, I have sticky notes all over my faux studio, which is my bedroom, that says, don't bring up LeBron until Nick does. That was what the show producers told me, and I got to follow it. Antoine, love having you here. It sounds like you were entertained. I'm so glad. This is what we do on Monday mornings. We got to take a break. Coming up, guys, we're going to talk some football now. Could Brady and Gronk miss the playoffs this season? Someone on our panel thinks so. Nick breaks down his projected NFC standings. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, check this out. Bears new wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr. stopping by Shirley to talk about his new team, to talk about playing at the age of 35, and maybe to touch upon his former quarterback Cam Newton just a little bit. It's all coming up a little bit later on First Things First. Meanwhile, back here on a Monday morning with Coach Eric Mangini. Hope you all enjoyed a little downtime this weekend, unlike our guy Nick here, who spent literally his entire weekend picking all 256 games of the upcoming 2020 NFL season. It's not work if you love what you do, buddy. Today we're going to focus on your NFC standings, Nick Wright. So why don't you take us through it?
Yeah, let's show it to America. A few things I'm sure are going to jump out at people. Most notably, the Chicago Bears being at the top of the standings, 12-4. Listen, everyone thinks Chicago's going to stink. The Bears won 12 games 2 years ago. They were 8-8 last year, despite Mitch Trubisky being their quarterback, despite having awful turnover luck. Only four teams had fewer interceptions, meaning the defense, meaning had fewer interceptions than the Bears. And they get Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan back. I think the Bears, with just league average quarterback play in Nick Foles, are going to be really, really good. Other things I'm sure will jump out to people: the Niners, not that much of a Super Bowl hangover. Yeah, they're not 13-3 again, but they're still back in the playoffs. And a team not in the playoffs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I gave them one more win, thanks to the addition of Tom Brady. The Bucs, the NFL did the Bucs some favors schedule-wise, starting November 3rd. They don't play a single game. Every game they play is either in a dome, in Tampa, or in Carolina. So cold weather shouldn't kill him. I just wonder if a 43-year-old quarterback is going to kill him. So that's how I see the NFC shaking out. The big surprise, I'm sure, for some is the Bears at the top and the Giants only winning two games. But, Coach, that's how I see the 2020 NFC standings looking when we look back on it 9 months from now.
Yeah, look, it's interesting, Nick, and I think the Bears pick is probably the most interesting. Ideally, they will get improved quarterback play, but it's still not going to match what Aaron Rodgers does, and it's hard to get that for anybody in that division. I like the Vikings going young. They had 15 draft picks. I think they're going to be better than what you have listed here. And for the Bears, their strength has been defense, and you talked about their lack of turnovers last season. I don't know how you see that or why you're projecting that to be significantly better. You know, in these other divisions, when you look at the South, the Buccaneers to me are a little bit of an unknown in the sense that this could go great or this could be a disaster. And you've got two older guys that you're counting on, and one of the things you're counting on is that they both stay healthy. And Tom's obviously done that a lot better than Gronk, but how he's going to fit and how he's going to fit in this environment that's so different than any offseason that we've seen, it's a big unknown. I'd say the other surprise is Dallas over Philadelphia. I don't understand why you see that jump being that significant in the East.
Well, to answer that question, and then I'll kick it to Wilds, I think Dallas got markedly better at the head coach spot. And I also think that it sometimes you just, things do run stale. And I think that happened with Jason Garrett. I also think Dallas had an extraordinary offseason, adding Gerald McCoy, drafting CeeDee Lamb, who I didn't think was going to be there. And whether Dak gets his contract done or not, to me, is almost irrelevant to the point of he's going to be playing. And so I like Dallas's chances to be one of the best teams in the conference. Wilds, I know you probably stopped listening after I had your beloved Bucks, your favorite team now, missing the playoffs.
Nick, I have supported you 100% since the first day we met. Seer of seers, sage of sages, prognosticator of all prognosticators, prophet of the NFL schedule. I support you on Super 6. I pulled my children's money out of their 529 and put it on your over-under win totals. So I'm a little bit confused by the Bucks, but I still support you. You have them at 8-8. What do you think happens here to my beloved Tom Brady? Why do you have them at 8-8?
Well, simply put, I think the middle of the schedule is going to kill them. That you've got weeks 5 through 12 at Chicago, home for Green Bay, at Vegas. Spoiler for tomorrow, I think the Raiders are going to be good. You play New Orleans, obviously, once in the beginning of the year and then there. And then to Kansas City. I also think the late bye week for a 43-year-old quarterback, not ideal.
I'll buy that.
And so they get their bye in week 13. And so I just think they're a team that they're going to lose week 1. And then starting in week 5 through 12, I see a lot of losses piling up there, Kevin.
Okay. I have one other question about the Bears. You were talking about Cam maybe to the Bears, but now you got the Bears being really good. How do you think that balances out?
Well, maybe Cam ends up. Maybe Cam ends up leading them to 12-4. I know they've got Nick Foles.
Oh, I'll
we'll
buy
see
that.
How that goes. But I don't think, Jenna, I don't think the Bears need great quarterback play. The Bears won 12 games with Mitch Trubisky as their quarterback. In the NFC in the last 3 years, try to do this off the top of my head, Seahawks, Saints, Rams. I think those are the only three teams that have won more games in the last 2 seasons than the Bears. Everyone thinks the Bears stunk last year. They won 8 games. They lost to Akeem Hicks. They lost Danny Trevathan. So I think the Bears are ripe for a comeback. To answer Coach's question, the turnover luck usually bounces back year over year. They had the most interceptions in football a year ago. They had the 28th most last year. If they just get average turnover luck, Jenna, I think they should be pretty good.
I actually like what you have in the NFC. I like that you got the Bears as the one seed. I like you got the Cowboys back in the playoffs. Brady not making the playoffs. So, Coach, I want to dive a little deeper. You agreed with Nick right off the bat. Yeah, I don't see the Bucks in the postseason. Can you give us a little bit more on why, and do you agree with Nick on that?
Well, no. I don't totally agree with Nick on that. This is one of the biggest projections that we have going, because how Tom is going to fit after all the time that he was in New England with one system, with one way of doing things, and now going to a totally different place, and whether or not they're going to adjust their system to what fits Tom the best, to me is a huge unknown. And I know everybody's excited about Gronk, and if Gronk produces the way that he historically has, then yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be, but the injury situation is real, and a year off may help your body recover to some degree, but you're also not in consistent football shape. It's a radically different set of physical demands that he's going to have to be under. So how this goes depends on how well they can all fuse together. And with the environment that we're in right now, there's really not great opportunities to fuse together. There's only so much chemistry and progress you can make on Zoom calls.
And Wild, you brought up Cam, and we've talked a lot about where Cam's going to end up. Depending on whether or not the authorities in Florida are going to let Tom Brady leave the state, it might be a good idea for Cam sign with the Bucs. He can be their road quarterback. I just don't know how that breaking an interim beef is going to end for Tom. So we have to let the legal system play out. But one thing that I find interesting that you guys didn't find interesting, or nobody acknowledged, if you will, I've got the Rams 5-11, and I don't think that made anyone bat an eye. The Rams high flying 13-3, genius Sean McVay. All of a sudden, you see him at the bottom of the standings, and I don't think it's that shocking. Like, I don't think people look at that as some hot take. Like, wow, I think people look at it and say, well, they lost Cooks, they lost Gurley, they're dealing with Jared Goff, and they look at that division that has three teams, all of whom I think people will, two of them in Seahawks and 49ers, a lot of people will pick to go to the Super Bowl. And the Cardinals, who I think will be some people's kind of sleeper pick this year, Coach. I mean, I don't know where you feel about the Rams heading into this year, but I don't think it is out of the mainstream to say they could finish last in that division, Coach.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for that to happen. And look, when you spend the way that they've spent, it's like using a credit card. At some point, that bill comes due and you've got to make cuts that can be very difficult, because you've got to eventually get back to even with the salary cap. And then they've also made a lot of trades that have hurt them in terms of future draft picks. And so now you can't really replenish through free agency. You can't replenish through the draft. You've got to cut talent because you've got to get you've used the credit card so much in the past. You've made some changes in the coaching staff, either because guys have gotten promoted or you decided a change was needed. So there's not that continuity as well. It's hard. It's hard to consistently be successful. And it's hard to consistently be successful if you are using the credit card and are trading away future talent for the ability to try to win right now.
The Rams were all in a few years ago, and when you don't win at all, you have very little wiggle room, at least as far as the cap is concerned, and guys wanting to leave and whatnot. So that's where the Rams find themselves in, at least ATN, according to Nick. Take a break. Coming up, Bears' new wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr. is going to join us. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. Now joined by new Chicago Bears wide receiver, Ted Ginn Jr. Ted, thanks so much for hanging out with us this morning. What have you been up to? How's quarantine been for you?
Quarantine been great. You know, sending home with my fam, becoming a teacher. I kind of feel like I'm repeating a couple grades. But it's been great. The atmosphere around the house has been great. And a lot of Zoom calls and virtual calls. So just a different way, you know, but it's been good.
Ted, I had the opportunity to talk to you last week, and you told, almost accidentally, a really interesting story about the arc of your career. So I kind of have a two-part question for you here. One is, You referenced that in after the year in Arizona, which was your least productive year as a pro, you had kind of started to doubt whether or not your career was going to continue. And then that year in Carolina happens. You have 10 touchdowns, nearly 800 yards, and set you on the path you're on now. And so the part one of the question is, how important was it to have people around you believe in you? And part two, kind of separately, your quarterback there, Cam Newton, currently doesn't have a job. How surprising is that to you?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with your first question first. You know, a support system is the biggest thing that you can have. And when somebody is down and out, you know, you start just to reach out, you know. And with me having a background in sports, you know, and my dad being my coach for football and track, you know, my coach of life, you know, you go back and you talk it over to him with your mom and your wife and different things like that. And they give you that gear to get back in there and go out and do what you have to do. And just going back to a place like Carolina at that time where you had so many friends and families and different brothers and different people that really knew who you was and knew what your deal was and how you can play. And, you know, we was unfortunate not to have Kevin Benjamin that year that I think would have took us to another height. But gave me my opportunity and I just took off. And like you said, man, Cam just believed in each other and we took what we can do as far as us as the receiver group, you know, with Philly and Devin Funches at that time with Greg Olsen. And we just did what we was good at and the coaches supported it and we had fun while we did it.
Ted, I want to start my question by saying thank you. We all miss live sports, and there's not a tremendous amount of sports stories in the sports ecosystem right now. So when you see a story come out just out of the blue, Ted Ginn says, by the way, I beat Usain Bolt in a race. Like, great, something to talk about for the next 20 minutes. Fantastic. So can you get into the details of this story, and is it even true?
It's a very true story. Penn Relays, 2000 and what's that, four? 2004 Penn Relays, you know, you had the U.S. teams, you had the Jamaica teams, and we was in lane eight. We was a team that was not even thought of, didn't even show up in the rankings, you know, and we came out, we jumped out in lane eight, and we was able to hold it. You know, I'm going to get that film over to the world so we can see all that.
There we go.
I love it. Hey, I got to ask you about the situation, the quarterback situation, Ted, that you're going into in Chicago. Mitch Trubisky was the guy there the last 3 years. You got Nick Foles now. The two of them are going to be competing for the job. I guess it'll be questions that you will be asked when everything sort of gets back to some semblance of normal. Who do you predict you'll be catching passes from week one?
You know, that prediction is kind of like out of my jurisdiction. You know, I go in to play for whoever's under the center, no matter if it's Nick or if it's Trubisky. We're going to go in and push the season like we're supposed to and fight for both of them. But, you know, only one is going to be able to play, and that's not my decision. That's the coach's decision. My part is to go out and make both of them look great, and that's all I can do.
All right, first of all, the fact that you beat Usain Bolt in a race shakes some of my foundational beliefs. My all-time athlete Mount Rushmore is Ali, Serena, Bolt, and LeBron. And if you're telling me Bolt wouldn't even be the fastest person on this call right now, then I have to reshape everything. So I apologize if my composure is lost a bit, but you really upset me here. So all I can do is just ask a question I already asked because I'm all a flutter. Well, how shocked are you that Cam don't have a job right now?
It's very shocking, you know, just going over the history of guys that been in that type of position that he's in now. Usually go out, find a team, and that next team start his chapter. But for whatever reason, I don't see why. But it's not for me to really go into. Only thing I could do is just keep him up as a friend, stick with him as a brother, you know, and whenever he needs that support or talk to, you know, just be there for him, you know. He's a great guy. He's good at what he does, you know, and he's a competitor. And some of that sometimes is a bad thing for him, is competitiveness because of the way that he can, you know, getting in slumps and different things like that. But I think everybody does it in some type of way, but his just get magnified.
Ted, America's foremost sports predictor, Nick Wright, has the Bears at 12-4 this year. Do you share that type of optimism about your team? And do you sense this type of optimism even though you guys are just on Zoom calls?
Well, you know, right now, man, like everybody say, they always had a defense. You know, that defense always stuck out, you know, especially with Khalil Mack, and then you add the new safety that came, and, you know, and the different pieces is kind of coming into their building that they feel great about, you know, and I think the whole team is kind of feeling great about it. Just through Zoom calls and just through everything, you know, we're making our connections the best way we know how, and it's just a new age and a new time period right now, and I like that we are 12-4, and I see that, you know. It's a great prediction, but, you know, we just got to go out and act on it. And I think once we go out and, you know, we get back into our facilities and different things like that, you know, and get that chemistry going, you know, it's all up to us. You know, every team, you know, I'd have been on, you always say, well, receivers have to catch and quarterbacks have to throw, and that will win ball games, and that's what we have to do.
I just want to, Ted, quickly follow up on what Nick was asking. I didn't realize how close you and Cam were. Have you spoken to him since the offseason started and he's been sort of letting the world know that he's healthy again? And if not, what would you say to him? Where would you advise him to want to go, want to play? What would be a good fit for him, you think?
Well, you know, it's the National Football League, so you never get to pick where you really want to go. You know, one thing I just told him was stay who he is. Trust the process. Believe in the process. And when you get an opportunity, shine. And that's all you can really do. And that's my motivation. It ain't really too much you can really say to a person when they're in a situation like this. But, you know, give them the most confidence and the most support that you can. And with him working out, it's just showing you that, you know, he's in the place where he want to be. And whoever come get him, man, that diamond going to shine.
Nice.
I like it. All right, Ted, we're going to switch gears just a little bit, have some fun, do a little rapid fire with you here. First thing that comes to mind, ready, set, here we go. Better pregame hype speech, Drew Brees or Cam Newton?
they both great. They both great. I plead the fifth.
Ted, that's not the wrong.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Drew Brees.
There you go. That's how you answer the question. Number two, here we go. Name something, Ted, on your bucket list.
Super Bowl.
Love it. Finally, name something you wish you were better at.
God.
Okay. Oh, Nick, deep. I yield the floor to you.
Personal excavation, Ted Ginn Jr. on a Monday morning. All right, listen, I'm not talking 04 pin relays, Ted Ginn. I'm talking about right now, middle of May 2020, middle of the street, you and Tyreek Hill, from here to the light post. Who's winning?
Me.
Wow, the confidence is unbelievable. You, if people don't know, you played defensive back in high school. Your final year, I think you had a half dozen pick sixes. Better feeling, a pick six or a punt return touchdown, and why?
I say a pick six because when you get a pick six, it's basically turned into a punt return. You know, and, you know, whenever you be able to take that ball out of that offensive hands, especially where it's down, when they're about to score, and you take it all the way back home, you know, I think that's the joy.
All right, lastly, and we'll get you out of here on this one. Six first-round receivers taken this year. All of them immediately right now would sign up in a heartbeat for 14 years like you're in the midst of in your NFL career. Part of your secret, we're being honest, is you've been very adept, as we've talked about, at avoiding contact, if you will. What is the advice you would give them on how to avoid said contact, as you've done throughout the lion's share of your career?
Well, you know, I think it's a knack that I have. Just growing up, always been a fast guy, but not the biggest guy. But, you know, heart is out of this world, you know. And sometimes you got to just know who you are and what you can do, you know. To survive in this league, you know, it ain't about taking the big hits. It's about making the right plays at the right time. And I believe that I make the right plays at the right time without having the big impacts, you know. And that's what's been my key, and I live by it. And, you know, if it's, you know, in my hands to win, I'm winning it. But if it's for my teams to get it, I'll make sure that I get in a position to make sure that they got it.
All right, Ted Ginn, thank you so much for joining us this morning. All the best of luck to you in Chicago this coming year. We're going to take a break. Coming up, we're going to play a little Deal or No Deal with Dak Prescott's future. That's next. This is First Things First. Thanks, Ted.
Good luck in class today, Ted.
Back here, First Things First, with Eric Mangini. It's time for stories to start your morning. Hey, you wondering why Dak Prescott still doesn't have a deal? Ask Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones, who said this over the weekend. There's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big of a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases your chances to win. Nick, that makes sense, right?
I'm sorry that I'm laughing. I just love this new trend of people throwing the word analytics into a sentence to try to make the most mundane or banal things sound smart. Hey, guys, there's new analytics out there. I don't know if you're aware of it, that it's better to pay less for things than to pay more for things. It took a lot of algorithms and a lot of computer power to figure this out, but we have finally cracked the code that if you can buy a car and they say you can pay $30,000 for it or you can pay $40,000 for it, analytics do say, believe it or not, it's better to pay the $30,000. I mean, I don't know if Stephen Jones did a weekend retreat at Pro Football Focus or the MIT folks had a conference with him, but wow. I mean, if they are this cutting edge in Dallas, look out, NFC, because the analytics do confirm. I checked with people. I texted Daryl Morey about this week in Wilds. They do confirm it is better to pay less than to pay more for things. I can agree with Stephen Jones.
More, it's good that you got Maury on the horn for that. All right. He's got a guy asked Dusty, our researcher. I'm like, you know, Nick's going to kill the guy. So can we like try to come up with a good full screen that proves that he's got a point? So the offer that they've got out to Dak right now would be 16% of the cap. Old Dusty made up this full screen. Here are the quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl. If you're over 10%, they're all Hall of Famers. So, Coach, the big takeaway here is, unless you're a Hall of Famer, don't pay more than 10% of the cap.
Well, it's good that you're putting Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame. I didn't know he was in already.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, but I think he will be.
He's going to go. He's a Hall of Famer, Coach.
Hey, yeah, we can discuss that another show. I like Eli a lot. But when you look at the salary cap, it there's going to be a year when you're paying a quarterback where he's going to eat up a significant amount of that space. And usually you're going to have to suffer through 1 or 2 years like that, depending on how you structure the contract. But the contracts for quarterbacks are going to continue to go up. The salary cap is going to continue to go up, and it's the cost of doing business. And when you wait, the longer you wait and as new contracts get done, a new bar is set and the more you have to pay. So it's in their best interest to get the deal done sooner rather than later. And it's probably also in their best interest not to publicly talk about how much value Dak has, because their That's camp right. is just going to get more and more resolved in waiting for the number they want.
Well, then, according to your logic, Coach, the Cowboys are 0 for 2. All they do is talk about it, and they are going with later rather than sooner, clearly, on the Dak negotiations. Moving on to the Green Bay Packers now, where Packers legend Brett Favre continues to weigh in on what Aaron Rodgers is going through. Said Rodgers has nothing to fear when it comes to his starting job and that his role is not to mentor rookie quarterback Jordan Love. coach. You coached Favre. You know him well. You agree with this?
Yeah, he doesn't have anything to worry about. Would I expect him to mentor a young quarterback? Yeah, I would. I would want that from a good player and a good guy and someone who's confident in their ability and their contribution to the team. Can you freeze out a guy? Sure you can. Is it the right thing to do? I don't think it's the right thing to do. He has plenty of ability to hold off a young quarterback. He can help him grow a little bit in the interim.
Well, Nick, like Eli Manning, Aaron Rodgers, also a future Hall of Famer, I think these quotes are a little bit, I don't know. They once you take them apart from the entire article, they seem a little more sensational than they actually are. He's saying that it's not his job. He doesn't have to go out of his way. But it's like, hey, do you want to come into the room with me and watch some tape? Like, all right, yeah, sure. But I'm not going to, like, have a lesson plan like I have to do in an hour when I have to start teaching second grade.
Well, listen, first, for the viewers that were watching the very beginning of the show, first of all, thank you for sticking with us through the whole hour. Second of all, earlier I gave Michael Jordan the award for least self-awareness. I would like to give Brett Favre the award for most self-awareness, because nothing would be more ludicrous than if Brett Favre is like, let me tell you this much right now. Aaron Rodgers better be his best friend, better mentor him. That's what a good teammate does. Because we all know that is not what Brett Favre did. Now, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to, because he had that experience, go the other way. I think he will put an arm around Jordan Love. It is not my understanding at all that Aaron Rodgers has any animosity at all towards the kid, towards Jordan Love. He didn't pick to be picked by the Packers. Now, whether or not Rodgers thinks the Packers should have traded up in the first round to draft a guy that they hope doesn't see the field for 2 years is a separate thing. But I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to take it out on Jordan Love, and I do expect him to do a better mentorship job than Brett did with him, Jenna.
Not hard to do. I understand there wasn't much of a mentorship job at all from Favre to Rodgers. Moving on to the New York Giants now. Their new head coach, Joe Judge, spent three seasons as an assistant at Alabama. That is when Nick Saban realized Judge was a fantastic coach. His words. So let's ask our coach. You expect Joe Judge to succeed in his first season with the Giants, Eric?
Yeah, success, it depends what the bar is. But look, if you work for Nick Saban for 3 years and you work for Bill Belichick, obviously you can handle a high workload. You've got to be smart. You've got to be resilient. You couldn't ask for a better post-grad education than to work for those two guys. And now to have an opportunity to coach your own team as a special teams coach who traditionally deals with the whole team and different from a offensive or defensive coordinator, I think that's actually an advantage going into this situation. The question is, how patient will the organization be? And the players and the organization needs to understand this is a different type of program and it's not for everyone. But if you hold in there, good things happen. It's based on the right principles and sound principles.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm worried about, Coach. For me, it reminds me of like little Brett Brown 76ers. Like, hey, we're rebuilding. Let's have some patience to take some bumps and bruises. Nick, America's foremost prognosticator of football schedules, has the Giants at 2-14. If I'm Joe Judge and I'm watching the show, I'm very nervous.
Yeah, as you should be. Coach Mangini, I checked my tracking number. My laminated personalized schedule arrived to your house late last night via courier. So go ahead and grab it and look at it. Assuming Coach doesn't have it handy, let's put it on the screen. Look at the first five for the Giants and the last five for the Giants. Steelers, Bears, Niners, Rams, Cowboys. Those first four games, by the way, Daniel Jones might have 15 fumbles the first month of the season. But that first five, that's 0-5. That last five, Seahawks, Cardinals, Browns, Ravens, Cowboys, that's another 0-5. So you got 0-10 buttoned around your season. Now, what they do in the middle six, maybe I undersold them. Maybe instead of going 2-4 in the middle six, they'll go 3-3. But this, I think they're going to have the number one pick of the draft next year. Daniel Jones is going to be awful nervous because Trevor Lawrence coming to New York City. It's a triple layered prediction. I hope, Coach, you didn't see you grab the schedule. Maybe one of your sons can bring it to you before the schedule show. But there it is for you.
Yeah, we're using it as a coaster upstairs for breakfast.
Oh, my God.
For the whole breakfast.
That's good. They can look at it.
Yeah.
It's like the president's.
On to some basketball now. So LeBron James tweeting over the weekend that he thinks Jerry West could average between 24 and 27 points and 8 assists in today's NBA. Nick, I'll throw it back to you. You agree with LeBron?
LeBron nailed it. Jerry West, one of the most underrated players in NBA history. Young folks don't understand. This is the 10th greatest player ever. Like, 3 times.
Wow.
He played Bill Russell in a game 7 of the NBA Finals. The first time, he goes 35-6, plays all 53 minutes because it goes to overtime. They lose by 3. The next time, he goes 36-10, plays all 48 minutes. They lose by 2. The next time, he goes 42-13-12, plays all 48 minutes. They lose by 2. 3 game 7 losses to Bill Russell by a total of 7 points. He played every minute in all of them. If one of those games goes differently, he's probably remembered a little differently. LeBron nailed it, Wilds.
So, Nick, you've got him as the 10th best. I think he's right around there. The most amazing part about Jerry West's career, he's probably the best executive in the history of the league. He's got 8 championships as an executive. Coach, what do you got?
Yeah, I think players are often graded down because of, you know, when they played versus now. But I looked at field goal percentage, and when I looked at field goal percentage, he wasn't in the top 250. And at number 250 was Byron Scott, a guy who was 6'3". And also played 14 years, and he averaged 14 points a game. So I'm thinking LeBron may be off
just by
a little bit.
Top of his head.
You can't adjust field goal percentage by era. Coach, you and I will have a conference call about this after the show.
You can do it's anything your worst Coach yet, wants to do.
I'm personally offended.
Back on the Zoom, that. Coach.
We got to go. I love it all. Have a great day, everyone. See you tomorrow.